Welcome, welcome, welcome. Long time no mess adoption, but let's get right into it with Alon Goren from Draper Goren Holm, the venture studio for blockchain startups that are killer, but also DAOs. Today we talk about the launch of Prime DAO. Enjoy.
How are you doing, Alon?
I'm excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
If you've never heard of Alon, he's a very successful, accomplished, future-thinking, future-proofed VC, nice guy. I would definitely Google him and watch his videos, his talks. It's inspiring. It's also laid back. It's there's an aura of niceness to Alon that almost hides the fact that he's a total badass. So with this, I'll let him tell us the story of how he got involved into finance and tech and the hurdles. I'd like to know, like, maybe right from young age, childhood, how did this drive mature?
Yeah, so we talked about this a little before we came on. We said we'd go super young. So to go super young, my background is kind of interesting in that I didn't have any kind of background where, like, you would think that this person's going to go into finance or something like that. And I wouldn't even say, you know, if I took a step back, that I'm in finance per se anyway, because it's more the fintech and the craziness of it all, the kind of destroying the current system versus being a part of it. But my background, you know, my parents were immigrants. They're Israeli. They basically moved to America on their honeymoon and never went back. Got jobs and just kept you know, doing things. And my dad, when I was a kid, had a business that rebuilt auto parts. He was always an entrepreneur. Like, everything that he did essentially was a job that he created for himself. And that was like built into our thinking, right? So when I went to his shop as a teenager, basically from the day I was old enough to go, every day after school, I'd go to his shop. I would do stuff there. Sometimes it was, most of the time, actually, it was just creating things and playing around and making art from the old auto parts and doing things like that. And just hanging out, because, like, my mom was a teacher, he was working there, and I had to be somewhere. I couldn't just be home mm-hmm. alone. So I'd be at his shop getting greasy and building things and doing things and trying to learn how a car works or do all the things that you do as a kid. And when I got older and I wanted stuff, and I'd be like, hey, I want a bicycle, or I want this, or I want to go out with my friends, my dad would, like, look at me and be like, okay, come on Saturday, you make cash, you put it in your pocket, and you got money. And, like, he kind of instilled in me at an early age that if I want something, I have to get it myself. Or if I need to make money, the harder you work, the more you'll make. And kind of, like, forced me into learning how to be an entrepreneur or be a salesperson or something like that. I can remember taking apart alternators to take the copper coils to fill a bucket. And if I filled a bucket all the way to the top with copper pieces, the recycling guy would come on Saturday mornings and I'd get $50 for filling up a bucket. $50 to a, you know, 14-year-old was a lot of money. Like, crazy amounts of money. This is more than 20 years ago.
So the richest kid in school.
That's right. So then that was the kind of lessons I grew up with at a young age. And then as I got to be a teenager and grow up and get a job and do stuff like that, just so happened that through, like, one of my brother's friends or something like that, I got a job as a teller at a bank, it's just the low level person while I was going to college, and doing that kind of thing. And you know, at the same time, what I was actually doing with my free time and stuff like that was being in a punk band with a bunch of my friends. And so the job was just to make enough money to do that. I would be sitting there while I'm helping.
I secretly imagined that every bank teller is in a punk band. So
it would be, the world would be a better place. but what was really funny though is that I was sitting there and I learned, you know, they had, like, hardcore rules for their computers. You couldn't be in any other systems or things like that. But I figured out how to use, I don't remember if it was still this back then, but it was logmein.com. And through the web browser, you could log into your computer at home. So I'd be logging into my computer at home while I was helping people, like working on flyers for punk rock shows and designing, like I had my own little record label for punk bands and stuff like that, designing the album covers and things like that while I was sitting at work. And after doing that job and going to school and doing some things like that, I got a job at Countrywide, actually. The big mortgage bank that was sort of in America, at least, it was pointed at like the group that like caused the financial crisis in 2008. Like it's like one of the biggest ones. And I was like part time working there. I got kind of lucky. I got like an assistance job, basically, like, you know, $7-8 an hour or something like that, part time. But it was because like when I turned in my resume, I knew how to use all these computer programs and things like that because I was a computer nerd. I got into the systems architecture group. So this was the group that was in charge of all of the systems and computers. And at the time, like implementing Windows Vista and like things like that. And so the server rooms and all that kind of stuff, which was really cool thing to check out. I actually created the screensaver that was across like 10,000 employees' computers around the world or whatever. And that was kind of fun stuff. Oh, wow. Like I got to learn how to play with like some JavaScript and things like that, which I didn't really know yet. But that was also a part-time gig while going to college. And finally, I got offered a full-time job after being there like maybe 6-8 months. It was a kind of a miserable place to work for anything other than the computer nerds. Like there were people whose job it was to try to sell us mortgages that we couldn't afford. And we were the employees of the company. Like it made no sense. They knew exactly what we could afford. So it was just not a great place to work at for those reasons, but it was a fun group of people. And like it was the computer nerds amongst them. So I learned a lot and it was cool. And then I got a full-time job at MySpace. And that was really like, that was where I wanted to be. And even though I was going to school still, I still hadn't finished college. I wanted to work at MySpace. At the time, it was like the big, it was almost at its height. It was just almost immediately after Fox acquired them. They bought a company called K-Solo. It was the first internet karaoke company where you could record yourself singing and while you're singing karaoke and share it with your friends on MySpace. And it was a bunch of Israeli dudes who I happened to know one of them, and they were acquired by MySpace and moved to LA from New York. And since I'm in LA, they called me and said, you know, only 3 team members are moving to LA. Do you want to come join us at MySpace? And I took the job, of course, to work full-time at MySpace. And I started to go to school part-time at night, you know, like once or twice a week at night. And that was where like my modern thinking of where I think crypto is now is where I wished it was back then. So very soon after getting that job, it became the most trafficked website on the internet. Like it was the coolest place. It was more traffic than Google. Like wow. it was the number one most trafficked website on the internet. Crazy. Like this was, you know, pre-Facebook and all of this stuff. Like it was crazy. So while I was there, I had an idea for a company with one of my friends there for crowdfunding. But this was before the word crowdfunding existed. This was in about 2008 times. And so we called it social fundraising. And we created a platform on the side, like as a side gig while we were working there, called Invested In. And the whole point of Invested In, we didn't even think about it as like investing in like the normal sense. We called it like, we were thinking about it like investing in your community and stuff like that. Like most of the stuff that was happening there was more like community-driven initiatives on this website. And one of the first use cases we had was like, what if a person in their community, let's say, this is the exact example I had in it, was a gardener. And I've been working for a landscaping service for the past 15 years, and I'm really good at what I do, but I want to start my own company, just like my parents started their own company. But I don't have the cash to buy my own truck, right? Like I need a big truck to have all, and the equipment and stuff like that. And I need $10,000 from the community to help me buy this stuff, or $5,000, whatever the amount is you need to get yourself off the ground. I need that. And the example I created on the website was like, I get people in the neighborhood to pre-buy a year of landscaping services, and they can even own a small piece of my company. Like, and what was funny is the second I launched that, I had all these lawyers hit me up that I didn't know when I shared it on, you know, like LinkedIn or MySpace or whatever, and all these groups. Mm-hmm. And they're like, that's public solicitation. That's illegal. And I was like, if I go on MySpace and I ask my friends and family to invest in my company, that's illegal. And they're like, yes. And my mind was like blown. Like, how can that be illegal? Like for that to be illegal sounded like the most un-American idea ever. Everybody talks about the American dream. You come to America, you start a business, you pull yourself up by the bootstraps. Getting your community to invest in your company was illegal. Straight up. Unless you were a big company and you could pay millions of dollars for filings and lawyers mm-hmm. to go public. Yeah. And it was like when I learned that, it just completely blew my mind. It was the craziest thing ever. And that's like when all of a sudden it like snapped into focus that like that's the direction like I have to hit hard.
Yeah.
And invested in that company. We had to like not allow people to raise money in that way on the website because the lawyers scared us sufficiently. but over time, we still did that as a side gig. Like invested in wasn't a full-time job at this point. It was like this side gig while we worked at MySpace. Something that happened at MySpace at that time was Farmville became a big deal. And Farmville was the first time that you sold digital goods like to mainstream yeah. people. Like my mom was playing, like moms were playing Farmville, not going like this on their phones, but people still yeah. weren't on their phones yet.
Yeah, it's not yet.
Not quite yet. I can remember being at MySpace and when I got like one of the first smartphones, I got like a BlackBerry or something. Like, so, yeah. so, but from there, I got a job at IMDb, the Internet Movie Database, mm-hmm. which was really, really fun and awesome while I was still doing invested in on the side with my partner, Yadid. And we're working on all this stuff. And eventually the Jobs Act was happening. The Jobs Act was called the Jobs Act. I'm convinced because somebody who was a smart politician figured out that no politician during the economic crisis would vote against something called the Jobs Act. So I'm convinced that if it was named anything other than the Jobs Act, it would have never passed. because what politician could be like, oh, you can't vote for Felipe. He voted against the Jobs Act.
Yeah, it's true.
Right. So anyway, it passed. And the Jobs Act, one of the things it did was it made public solicitation legal. And that means that you could share on the internet. Yeah. My company is raising money. It still didn't fix 99% of the problems. Like you still can't participate if you're not an accredited investor, which means you can't participate if you're not a millionaire. And they created some cases in which you could, but the Jobs Act passed and then it took another 2 years for it to actually be written into law. And the laws just stink. Like if we're being totally honest, they suck. Like they're not good enough yet. They're a step in the right direction, but a step in the right direction is like still miles behind.
Yeah.
But we were able to create a business for invested in. I quit my job and I made this my full-time job. And I just kept seeing how the regulation was a huge wet blanket on what we really wanted to do. You know, in the United States, you just couldn't do crowdfunding in a meaningful way. And it started, the model started to get refined in better ways. It fixed some of the problems, like AngelList started doing a really cool thing and they got a no action letter from the SEC, which means that they basically, when you get a no action letter, it's like a blessing from the SEC saying, this is kosher and we won't get you in trouble for continuing to do this. But they kind of, you have to push the line and then you have to submit it to them and say, here's our process. Will you give us a no action letter? It's kind of a stupid way of doing things, but it's better than waiting for them to fix it because they never will unless you do stuff like that. And another company that launched and we were actually the technology that powered it was one called Boost Funder. Boost Funder was Adam Draper, Tim Draper's son. He wanted to launch a crowdfunding platform, essentially, for the accelerators and incubators that were popping up all over the world to raise money online. And they launched it kind of ahead. They launched way before AngelList did it, and kind of like pushed the boundaries of regulation when they did it, which was really, really awesome. We got to power the website, and it was super cool. And their tagline was the startup marketplace. And that was really cool. It still was, I think, only for or mostly for accredited investors, but it was still like way better than anything that was out there at the time. Because, you know, like think about entrepreneurs around the world. Like if they couldn't travel to Silicon Valley, like it was, they basically didn't have 99% of funding opportunities. It's different now, partly because of this kind of stuff. And the openness of the internet has just grown that much more in the last 10 years, but it still was really, really cool. Over time, they ended up actually shifting and launching their own accelerator called Boost. And so Boost Funder doesn't exist in the way it did. And it probably is a good thing because at the time it was pushing the boundaries of regulation, maybe a little too far.
A little too much.
I loved it. It was really, really cool. But what's cool about that is because I got involved in launching Boost, we sort of powered it for them. I got to know Tim Draper at the time through the fact that he invested in an accelerator that I was a part of. And that's how I met him. And he introduced us to his son, Adam. And I started going to all of the Boost demo days. Going to the Boost demo days, I started learning really quickly. Adam was one of the earliest investors in Bitcoin companies. So he was, if I remember correctly, if not one of the, I think he was the first outside check into Coinbase as an angel investor.
Wow. And how did Tim feel about it at the time?
I don't know exactly, but I do know that very soon after Tim invested in Coinbase too. Tim was very early in Bitcoin. But you know what's really cool about both of them is I don't think they care very much about what other people think and do when they make their decisions, which is why they're my favorite investors I've ever worked with or known, right? Like I had a job in the VC space in between doing that company and doing what I do now. And one of the conversations I remember having with the guy who hired me, and why I love this guy, he was an investor in my previous company. He said, "What are you doing next? Come join us as a venture partner, this and that." He started asking me questions, and he's like, "Well, what if, you know, like you were looking at this deal and you shared it with all these people and they weren't interested in it? Like what would you do?" And I remember like in my head, I had like this interview hat on. So I was like, "What does an investor want to hear right now? I need this job. I want to get this job." So I'm like trying to say the right thing. And the guy's like, "Who cares what the other people think? It's your job not to care what the other people think. You know, like do it yourself." He's like, "Go against the grain. That's the whole point of this thing." And I remember him saying "go against the grain" because "Against the Grain" is the name of my favorite punk album of all time. It's a Bad Religion album called "Against the Grain." So that stuck in my head because he said "go against the grain." It was like, you know, like there's certain weird things, like how do you remember something from 5 years ago or whatever, but that stuck to me. But going back to the Draper stuff, they invested in Coinbase. I didn't know that at the time because it was very under the radar and all that, but Boost, by the second or third group of companies they were working with, started investing in Bitcoin companies around the world, exchanges all around the world, people doing products for Bitcoin around the world, and all of these things. And so I started learning more and more about crypto. In 2013, we experimented with crypto to see if it would work for microtransactions for crowdfunding, which we thought could be like amazing because the problem with microtransactions, like people giving a dollar or two to each other online, was the fees were just impossible. The fees killed it. So like every credit card transaction provider had a minimum. And the lowest you could basically make a transaction online be was like 30 cents. And so the way we had to go around it was we created like a sort of bank account within our system. People could put like $50 in and then distribute those $50. And we essentially had our own ledger behind the scenes for our system. You know, if the blockchain existed back then, it would have saved us, you know, satisfied that problem. So it did exist, but it wasn't ready for mainstream. So we mined some Bitcoin and Litecoin in our office right at the time when Litecoin launched. So we could figure this out. It was like 2013 or so. And we mined it in our office for like a month. We got in trouble from the landlords. We like completely like, our office was the size of this room that I'm in now. This is my kid's room. Mm-hmm. And it was like six people packed into a closet basically working. And then we had this miner thing in that we built ourselves out of some like a box crate and a big fan. And we were cranking the air conditioning to make it not so hot, 24 hours a day, even when we weren't there. And so we got in a bunch of trouble. We had to pay the electricity bill for the whole building that month. And then we turned it off because it just wasn't ready for mainstream adoption, even close. And so, you know, it was like, oh, fun experiment. And then we kind of just forgot about it for years. Even in 2015, I did a talk with Adam Draper out next to where I live. He lives in Northern California. I live in Southern California. He flew down because there's a big startup group that I organized out here called 805 Startups. And we did a big talk about Bitcoin. There was like 200-300 people there, all about Bitcoin in 2015. And even then, I like loved it, talked about how it's going to change the world, but I didn't buy any myself. I didn't have like a use case for it, like other than speculation. And still, that's not even my style. It's funny because I became an investor, but it's not because I love speculating on stuff. It's because I like to invest in people and companies that are going to change the world, you know, at a later. So that sort of evolution brought me in more and more into crypto, like in terms of understanding it and wanting to use it to change the world and do all the things that I thought were not fair about the financial systems. Man, I'm talking too much.
Yeah, that's the whole point of this, bro. You can talk as much as you want.
And then Joseph and I, who separate from my company invested in, decided to start a crowdfunding conference because we'd go to these conferences all over the United States, and there were all of the service providers for the crowdfunding world would be there, the lawyers and the accountants, the platforms like me. Joseph was like had a marketing platform, and all of the service providers would come and hang out with each other and talk about the rules and regulations and all this stuff. And it was the hugest waste of time. As much as I joked with people in the industry, I said, as much as I love grabbing a beer with you, this is completely pointless. Like I didn't need to fly to Orlando to some crappy hotel convention center place to grab a drink with my friend who lives in Santa Monica an hour away from me. What was the point of this? We're all just talking the same things. And I would see my customers there from Invested In. And I'd be like, why are you guys here? None of your customers are here. There's no point in being here. You already have an accountant and a lawyer. You already have a marketing firm. You already have a platform. Why are you here? To talk about the rules and regulations over and over and over again? It's a waste of time.
To complain.
And so we decided that we would try to make a conference ourselves in LA so that it would be, you know, like not, so we didn't have to travel for selfish reasons. Plus LA didn't have a like real conference for crowdfunding. And this conference didn't exist anyway anywhere. And we created a conference called Crowd Invest Summit. And the idea behind it was like, we'll bring the actual companies who are raising money on the internet together, and we'll bring the actual people who are interested in investing in those companies together in a place and sort of bridge the gap to make it easier to participate online. Like we grew up in this world, but most people still at that point, let's say 5 years ago, 6 years ago or so, when we started it, still wanted to like, if I was going to write like a $1,000 amount, I say write a check, but I've never written a check before to a company in my life. But you know, it's always been a wire or a transaction speech on the internet. But like, if you're going to give $1,000 to somebody, people still needed to like meet them in person. And especially even 5 years ago, there wasn't web-based conferencing like there is today. where, you know, you could have a conversation like this and feel like you know someone without being there.
Yeah.
We're the ones amongst us who grew up with this are the weirdos that have friends around the world they never met in person, you know, at least five True. Years ago. Now it's a little more normal, but we're still kind of weird. So we made this conference, and the first conference was the biggest crowdfunding conference there ever was, ever. Because it was like people needed this. And the service providers loved it because they actually got to meet their customers. And so mm-hmm. then it started this cycle. But while this was happening, Joseph and my full-time focus became more and more of this crypto space and the blockchain space and learning and understanding that. And our frustration with the rules and laws and the regulations, the things that we hated from the beginning that sort of brought us into crowdfunding and regulation and stuff like that, were feeling more and more egregious, especially with technology and the world becoming smaller and more borderless. And so over time, CrowdInvest Summit became focused more on crypto. And then in 2017, when everything kind of blew up, we rebranded it to CryptoInvest Summit. And then we realized that it became, the word crypto was all about speculation and all this stuff, which we you know, didn't necessarily not like, but it was with the hype of the craziness of 2017-18 and the scamminess and the short-term thinking that was going on in those times, we decided to rebrand again to just LA Blockchain Summit. We just went, you know what, like, and we got crap. In that time, there were people who tried to sponsor the conference that we said no to because we couldn't verify how legitimate they were. We had people, ICOs, who were like, we'll give you $500,000 to be like the title sponsor and be the this and that. And we said no to them. And people were like, what's wrong with you? Take it. And we're like, this is our lifelong reputation. I can't be the dude who shilled that crappy thing. And we're just not going to do it. So we tried to walk a fine line. There's still things that snuck in, of course, like we couldn't stop every sponsor who was illegitimate. We couldn't vet every person, but we wouldn't allow the top sponsors, like the title sponsors, to be these people. And we got it helped our reputation because we did that. And we built a sustainable conference. So after, you know, there was that 2017, let's say 2018 era, anybody who created a crypto conference packed the room, right? Yeah. And then afterwards, you'd go to their next version of the conference, it would be empty. It would be like a ghost town. It was weird. When that happened for us, we doubled down. We made our conference free. We got Steve Wozniak to be, you know, like the keynote speaker. We did everything we could to make the conference bigger. Because for us, we're like, we were in love with this industry. Like, we realized that this is going to solve all the problems we ever wanted to deal. Like, every problem we ever had in the crowdfunding space is being solved by this problem. We truly believe in a borderless global economy, and that, you know, and so we sort of doubled down and kept doing it. But at a certain point, what was funny is we're full-time crypto. We had this conference, and we never meant for the conference to be our full-time job. And we're like, what are we doing here? Like, we don't have jobs anymore. Our conference is our full-time job. It wasn't even making money. It was a free conference. Like, and we were like, you know, we have families to feed. We have to figure out what we're going to do. And we decided to invest in companies. And at the beginning, we had no cash to invest in companies. So we would do deals. Like, our favorite company that we had ever come across doing the crypto conference was Total. So we met David Blesnack, and we're like, this dude is a rock star. He's speaking our language. He's getting up on stage. He's kind of fighting with people in a respectful way, arguing with people. And like, this is what we want. And what we loved was that Total was the first time, you know, a couple years ago when we met him, it was the first time you could deal with a decentralized exchange, without having to use, Ether Delta. Back then, I don't know if you remember, like, it was so bad. The user experience was so horrible that it was just people who were experienced traders or crypto people would lose money on Ether.
Would make mistakes.
Not because of any hacks or anything like that. It's just, it was such a bad interface, and then half the transactions would fail. And if your transaction was failing when you were taking money off of it, you know, you could lose it all, or at least it would be really hard to recover and figure out. And so it was just such a bad experience. All of a sudden we used like an exchange aggregator, and it was like an easy to use simple interface where you could like drag, like, I want more ETH, I want less this, you know, execute trade, and it would just do it. You know, that was like mind blowing. So the product was mind blowing, the people behind it are mind blowing. Like, this is, we met David Lesnack, who you know now from Prime. We're talking about Prime. We'll get there eventually.
Yeah. We'll get to Prime.
And then we met Jordan Lyle, who is their head of product. And Jordan now is at Consensus, and he's the guy who created the whole meme craziness.
So he was at Total before he went to Consensus?
He was the product guy for Total. So that beautiful interface that I saw was made by him. And so these are like the two dudes that made for me crypto usable. Up until that point, I like loved it. I engaged with it, but I was like, this is unusable. Like EtherDelta, if this is what it takes to use a decentralized exchange, like nobody's going to use a decentralized exchange. And now cut to today, you know, skip all the stuff we did along the way, cut to today, like now DEXs are much more usable than ever before. And those types of products and people like them in the space have made it that way. And I think it's still not ready for full mainstream adoption, but we're getting so close and we're creating these opportunities.
So this is a great segue to talk about what brought us together, which is we are both participating on a project that is an experiment, it's a social sort of thing, which is a DAO. And I expect anyone to be listening to this or watching this on YouTube to kind of have a sense of what a DAO is. If you don't, I'm going to link it somewhere in the nice video that Prime DAO is using for to get people to understand DAOs. But then looking at the story that we just heard from Alon and this single-minded passion to help people transact value, to create things that are bigger than themselves, it makes all the sense that you chose to support from supporting Toto. You then chose to license Toto's tech to a emergent group of people that haven't met and are cooperating via the internet. So would you like to talk more a little bit about it, like the DAO?
Yeah, it's crazy, right? So like, I mean, I can't take credit for the structure or figuring out how to like basically open source Total's technology and give it to the community through PrimeDAO. That was David Lesnack and Luke and Pat and Chem and the guys who really were instrumental in creating PrimeDAO. But this is something we've always sort of talked about, because Total is, you know, in my opinion, the best and first DEX aggregator that's out there. Like all these other ones that are out there are either like derivatives of it, or they've taken it to another level, which is the whole spirit of the community, right? Mm-hmm. And there wasn't a good mechanism for Total as a sort of for-profit company, which is weird for this space, right? To sort of give their technology to the group that are stepping it up, like taking it to a new level, which they want to do because they're as big of nerds for this space as all of us. So David put together that structure and that idea of basically like giving their tech that they've spent the last few years building, spending millions of dollars in development costs and things like that, just giving it to the community through this structure. And I think that's really, really cool. We kind of heard that they're doing that stuff, and I started participating in sort of like the earliest community calls because I was super interested in it for many reasons. I actually build and play around with this stuff. I'm not like a Solidity developer or very good at it. I joke that I can take something that exists and break it, but I'm not going to build anything from scratch. But like there's the WordPress crypto exchange plugin that I built on top of Total's API that made it so that anybody who's like a media, I started it for the media partners of the summit to allow them to add crypto trading to their website, non-custodial, totally DEXs. And I built that plugin, and now there's like over 500 installs of that plugin. So there's 500 new DEXs in the world on media sites or on WordPress sites because I created that plugin. And so like I wanted to participate in PrimeDAO because I was thinking like, can I, like if Prime exists, could those like, could people be rewarded for bringing liquidity to decentralized exchanges? Yeah. Like, as much as, you know, I do love certain centralized products and exchanges, because I feel like that's going to be the gateway to get mass adoption, because people, you know, my brothers or my parents are probably not going to be like installing MetaMask and participating, doing all that stuff, right? So we do need some rails, some centralized rails to also take the money out of their bank account and bring it into our world,
crypto land.
Right? So we need the rocket ships to send them onto our planet. And so I love that stuff. And I'm not going to be totally anti-centralized exchanges and stuff like that. But anyway, we're working on all this stuff. And I wanted more people to be able to have DEXs. So I was trying to think of like ways. Like when I was on those first calls, how can I, you know, I'm listening to them talk about the products and I'm going like, I wonder if we can find a way to, you know, incentivize more people to come into the crypto space and to launch DEXs using Prime. And so I'm looking at it from that way. And I heard like Luke start to talk about the first inklings of the DAO ratings product that they're talking about, or not DAO ratings, but they're calling it Prime ratings, or just it's a ratings tool, like analyzing the smart contracts, auditing them, checking the health of the community, doing all these things and giving a rating to different DeFi products. Right? Mm-hmm. And if you can rate DeFi products and say, you know, like, this one is a 10 or an A plus, or I don't know how exactly they'll do it. This one's an A plus, this one is a D, you know, like use at your own risk. Then you can start telling people, you know, I can tell my friends and family, hey, come participate. But before you do anything, check Prime's rating system. Don't participate in anything that's not an A or higher. You know, like nine or ten.
Yeah. So this is a good segue for us to kind of also talk about the stated mission of PrimeDAO, right? So there's several initiatives, but the general mission is to make the DeFi space navigable and or friendly, to map out this secret garden where some of the berries are poisonous and they're all very shiny and colorful. And so if you're interested in these things and you're listening, it's a permissionless system to a certain extent. It's a DAO and DAO stack in incubation stage. And what's nice about DAO stack DAOs is that anyone can propose. There's no attrition cost to like trying things out. So if you have an idea, you can just put it up. We do prefer if you join the Discord server and join the conversation and make what we call a pre-proposal, which is sending your idea to the chat. And that's helpful to you as well in terms of getting something through, because it allows people who are basically, they're going to consult you and help you and work with you for your success for free, because they want the good proposals to happen. So that's how it feels to interact in a DAO, right?
It's really cool. If you, you know, go to primedao.eth.link and check it out and check out all the documentation, join the Discord. That's a cool thing to check out, that whole, process of people giving pre-proposals, reading, you know, people's comments, people privately connecting to go over that stuff. It's the first time I really participated in a DAO in a super meaningful way. You know, like I've participated in DAOs and, you know, played around a little bit in the past, but this is the first time I've been like very intimately involved and helped people with proposals and made proposals myself. You know, I voted on them.
Your son made a proposal, right?
Yeah. So yeah, my son, poopoo.eth, he's been making lots of NFTs and goofing around in the space a lot. And he, heard about, so he, we're in Corona world right now and, working from home. So I'm actually, because he needs the other computer, I have actually been working in his room. So this is his room. So I've got like his Captain Underpants books in front of me up here on the shelf. And I'm, you know, like I'm in his room, which is kind of cool because it probably brings me into his world a little bit. And he's actually in my room on the computer, on the desktop doing his school. But he comes in and he hears what I'm doing. And he saw me. I said, hey, one of the days, you know, weeks ago when things were first getting started on DAO Stack, I said, hey, I have to take DAI and convert it to XDAI. And you've never seen me do this. He knows what MetaMask is because he's created some NFTs and he's and he has a Zerion wallet that he checks his holdings on, because I won't let him actually transact yet on his own without me being in the room on my laptop. So I'm scared he's going to buy thousands of dollars worth of NFTs in like one afternoon.
With a flash loan or something like that.
That would be epic. I'd be proud of that. That would be great. So I was like, hey, you got to check this out. I've never done anything on the XDAI chain before. So I went through Pat's step-by-step instructions of how to, you know, add XDAI to MetaMask, switch over. I've used other chains before, but never XDAI. And usually it's just the test nets and stuff. And so we did that, and he was like looking over my shoulder. He's like, why did we do that? And I was like, well, now I'm going to start voting on the various proposals. And I got a vote on the first proposal that PrimeDAO is doing. And he knows PrimeDAO just by name and stuff like that. He helped make a Lego logo right at the beginning that he made an NFT of and stuff like that. So he knows the names. But then once I did a proposal, and then he saw he saw the different proposals of what was going on. He's like, I want to make a proposal. And I was like, well, what are you going to do? And he's like, I'm going to think about it. And I actually he told me, it was so crazy. He went and he created a Google Doc, and he took the, he did a speech for trying to be in his, at school, his, what's it called? Student council, where you like run and people, you mm-hmm. classes to vote of who's going to be the representative for the class. And he had a proposal that said like, I'm going to help our class in the following ways or something like that. Mm-hmm. And he took that, that Google Doc he created, and he edited it, and it said, I'm going to help PrimeDAO in like the following ways or something. Then it was bullet points, and he just made his own bullet points.
That's awesome.
And then he shared the Google Doc with David Blesnack and with Pat and with me. And he actually, every time I made a comment, he would respond with something kind of snarky. Like he'd be like, no, straight up to every comment I made, which is really funny.
That's fantastic.
David and Pat got to see, and he shared it with Joseph, my partner. And he put together a legit proposal. And actually, he asked me to share it in the pre-proposals area because he's seen me, you know, he actually knows how to use Discord really well because we have a family Discord channel with my cousin, with his cousins who play video games with him. And so he knows that the pre-proposal channel exists, and he asked to share it there. And Pat made the comment that he should request more Prime tokens. And he was like so proud of himself. And like he put the actual proposal in, and it passed. And so the first thing he did was he has a poopoo.eth membership NFT token that over 200 unique people have. And he sent them an NFT that was about PrimeDAO and promoting PrimeDAO. He said, everybody should check out primedao.eth.link in the thing. And he airdropped them an NFT. And, and he, I've got a video of it, but I don't like sharing videos of the kids and stuff like that. Yeah. But I have a video of him sitting at my computer, actually cutting, like I had to coach him up how to cut and paste. And the guys in the meme community actually shared a special version of Multisender that can send ERC 1155 tokens. Mm-hmm. I have a video of him minting the token. I have a video of him actually getting the addresses of all of his token holders.
So we got disconnected, guys, but what he was saying is that he was watching with absolute fatherly proud the moment when Poopoo pressed send and he made a video for the future that he's not going to share, of course, but I'm very impressed by this story. There's some of the technical aspects of what your son is already mastering are still open questions to me because I'm starting to play with NFTs now. So I'm definitely going to hit him up for some advice or something.
Let's do a collaboration. He loves, by the way, before this call, I showed him, I went on, I think on your Twitter, and I showed my son and daughter some sketches you had from, I think, DAO Fest or something like that. Oh, and he's so excited to see the art you're creating for Prime.
Oh my God.
Yeah, they're super excited. And they like, but that's like the one thing I try to do is I think that the things I learned as a kid in creating art and just creating things, like building things, were the most important parts of my education. In my dad's shop and all that stuff was one thing. But when I went into high school and in junior high even, I think I was trying to game the system or something. And I felt like I was like cheating the system by doing as many of the, I was lucky that I went to a school that had wood shop and metal shop. And mm-hmm. since I knew how to use some of those tools from a young age, I went that direction. But I felt like I was cheating the system because I was like, how does this count as school? You know, like I'm building things. Welding. I'm like fabricating things out of metal, and somehow that counts as school. So I was all 4 years of high school, I was in wood shop and metal shop. And I found ways to avoid taking like the real classes. But the thing is, in my mind, like I think that's a really important thing that kids and people aren't learning today, which is like have an idea and by the end of the day, create something, like actually have something physical, tangible to show for it. And it's not necessary, like, and by the end of the day, it might not be the thing you wanted it to be. It might be better, it might be different, or you might have failed, right? And like, oh crap, it doesn't work. But like people don't do that. So my kids and I are constantly like, that's what I can't, like when they're not allowed to use the computer, like when they're not allowed screen time, I go like, what are you making? Let's create something. Either draw something, write a song, do a something, like let's create. And so they love seeing that stuff. And so really, yeah, really cool.
That's totally my focus.
Yeah, getting back to
teaching people how to paint since like 15 years and stuff, you know, like getting
that's
people
so
like
cool.
That's actually my first version of a first date, is when that kind of evolves and you just create something together. It's a good start.
That's amazing.
But
yeah,
so getting back to the prime stuff, I know how transformative it can be when you have the experience of seeing like a working DAO, which mm-hmm. Pat, Luke, me, we have a lot of experience from the Genesis times, and we have a culture of this, that it was very, very, very well set up for Prime. Another like positive shout out to Prime is that the onboarding material is like top notch. And I know who are the people that are doing it and stuff and how much they're working. This is a passion project that is like 24/7 tooling every little detail, everything that might create any level of anxiety is explained somewhere. Like it's done exemplarily. Is that a word in English? Exemplary, I don't know. But then, so through this transformation of seeing a working DAO and seeing that people can like bring like intrinsic motivation, extrinsic motivation together and doing cool stuff and just allowing each other to have ideas, everybody's like pushing each other to excel more.
Yeah.
How has it changed your expectation of the future? And do you have sort of a landscape, an imaginal landscape, a liminal vision of what the future might be if like we succeed and keep building what we're building?
I joked that the ones who like my friends from like childhood who know me and stuff like that were like, you were like in a punk band and now you're doing this computer thing, and they like read about it on the internet. And I was like, I was saying the same thing 20 years ago as I'm saying now. It's just a totally different medium. And the only difference is that I think this is the tooling and the technology to actually build what I've been envisioning and dreaming. Like when as a teenager, I was screaming, fuck the border. I still mean that, right? Like I still understand that and I still get it. I just didn't understand how it would work back then. Now I know how it's going to work, right? Like now I know that we can use technology to streamline regulation. We can use technology for governance so people can govern something and decide on things and vote on things in a much more fair way than the way the government's set it up, and in a global way. And once people figure out, you know, digital jurisdictions, like the world is completely changing. And the people who have power no longer have power, right? And so that's like revolutionary, crazy, and out there and nuts. But like that's truly where I believe the future is going to go and where I want it to go. And so when I look at DAOs and I look at this stuff, we still have one major problem to fix, is that, you know, we still need to be technologically savvy, still have some kind of, if not education, but some kind of sophistication of understanding the technology to participate. But that's changing. Like, DAO stack is freaking crazy and amazing and great. And every new version of that, every new version of MetaMask or wallet and, you know, API 3 connection or Web 3 connection. I mean, I said API 3 because I'm thinking about a partnership with PrimeDAO and API 3, and they're doing something cool. But like, I'm thinking every time Web 3 gets easier to use, you know, MetaMask mobile gets updated or new wallets get created, it's going to make it easier. And it's going to make it so that more people can participate. And the more people that can participate, the more truly democratic and revolutionary this stuff is. And so the fact that a group of people, you are in Berlin, I am in Southern California, Joseph, my partner, is out here in Southern California, but in a few weeks, he's going to be in Austria. Luke is in, he was in Curacao, I think maybe he's in Europe again, but wherever everyone is, right? You know, there's people in our group all over the world. It doesn't matter. They're all participating. They're all making proposals. People, like, there isn't like a CEO who's deciding to hire their cousin or their friend or their anything. People are making proposals. People are either shooting them down or approving them. And the people are actually governing this thing. And before this thing even got started, before they decided to even do a full launch, there was like 50 or so individual participants contributing. That's crazy, right? That's not, you know, a startup CEO, which I believe in startups and the way they work, but this isn't like a startup CEO saying, this is the problem I'm going to solve. I'm going to do this myself. I'm going to hire a team. I'm going to raise money. I'm going to do whatever I do. This is like 50 people from around the world, 50 groups of people from around the world saying, let's come together and build something incredible. And that's never happened before. And I think that those barriers to entry are what we all want. We all want, like, I look at, you know, I have Draper Gordon Holm. We have our venture studio, but we also have our fund that we run, right? And the fund has to look at things in two ways. At least this is how I explain it to investors who were trying to get to invest in us. Is we look at it in two ways. There's the regulation right here, right? And this regulation is, whether we love it or not, whether I believe it's egregious or not, whether I believe it's American or fair or bullshit, it exists. And as an American, if I don't comply with that regulation, if I don't do certain things, I have consequences. And so there's technology that's being built to streamline that regulation. That's like security tokens and things like that, right? Digital securities. And there's some that are really good, and there's some that I think are a stupid way of looking at it. Like, honestly, like, they're just taking a piece of paper and digitizing it and saying, this is a digital security. That's no different than what we do now.
Yeah.
And then there's people who are actually creating technology to, like, not circumvent, but to streamline it in a way where the consumer or the investor or the startup doesn't feel the pain of that regulation. That's pretty cool, because that's kind of going like, hey, you throw a hurdle in front of us, we're going to use technology to jump that hurdle, and we'll still be here, yeah, you know, doing what we do and running our company. That's kind of neat. That's what we wish existed when crowdfunding started and is now starting to happen. But then there's the other side, the global side, that's going, you know what? Fuck the regulation. We're not going to use technology to streamline it. We're going to completely go around it, because we don't need to deal with it. Maybe there's certain regulations that you want to be extra safe about. Like, you know, we may have to, you know, United States-based investors may not be able to participate in something. And that's less to do with the DeFi product and more to do with the shitty US regulation in this world and the uncertainty.
And the willingness to enforce, right? The willingness and the abrasion of the enforcement.
Yeah. And it's like even less about, well, it is about the enforcement, but even less about that in my head than the uncertainty. Like, it's really ridiculous that there aren't, at least if you're going to have rules and laws, be clear about what they are. like you ask five lawyers, you get 10 different answers of what you're supposed to do in this situation. So it's just crazy. So that's where the DeFi side comes in my opinion. Like mm-hmm. if we can't participate in something in a meaningful way in the globally, then let's find technology that will circumvent that will fix that. And I'm not saying to completely like shuck regulation or do anything like that. I'm saying to do what's fair and right. And what's fair and right always isn't what the government says is fair and right. What's fair and right isn't always what the banks say are fair and right. So that's one of the things, like when David and when Pat and Shem and all the Luke, when everybody was starting to get Prime DAO together, DeFi blew up in the meantime. Yes. And you saw the sushi swaps and you saw the yams and you saw all the different stuff. And whether you agree with them or not, a bunch of really ridiculous stuff came out and a bunch of very cool stuff came out. And it was hard for the people amongst us who weren't as sophisticated or maybe some people are purposely blind to it, right? Like because they just wanted to make money. There wasn't a good way to differentiate between the people who are doing it responsibly and the people who are doing it to make money. And that's like so important in this world. And that's why I loved from the beginning the sort of ethos and the idea behind DeFi, DeFi responsibility or just transparency in a real way. Like so that's why I love what's going on in the DeFi side. Yes, it can be circumventing certain regulations and things like that that, you know, maybe were built to protect people. But I think that there are ulterior motives based on the fact that like governments are really effective at certain things, and then somehow they become very ineffective at things that serve their, serve certain purposes. So without going full conspiracy theory, like that's why I love DeFi. You know, I want a global, completely borderless world. And I think that will solve so many problems. And I think when you see what's happening in Iran and that Bitcoin is trading at a crazy premium there, that's because the people are seeing, what a borderless world could look like and what a world without war could look like. And I think that's where this stuff is going. And without going, I'm going down the rabbit hole hardcore, but that's I think as much as we think this is years and years in the making, it's still like, we're still planting seeds. Like I joke, like the industry is still in its diapers. We still are so early. So people should come and participate and learn about this stuff. And I think it's going to have a huge impact on the world. Sure. Knock on wood, and it does.
And every step that each one of us takes and each new one of us that joins sort of this way of thinking and doing, I see month to month that something happens, something gets enabled just because of the mesh of relationships and conversations and people. Like it is a people thing. There is a tech side, but it's also a people thing of like relationships happening and things getting done. And all I feel like we're just like building this starship, and it's like just every little mini system that it needs, and like check, 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 and it takes time.
Totally. It's community too. When we were younger, like the thing that's crazy is that I'm not sure exactly how old you are. I'm 37 years old.
And thank God so one person is older than me in this space. I'm 34, but I'm always the elder in the room in crypto.
I think feel like I look like a baby because I shaved last night for the first time in months. But the thing that's crazy is that, I grew up with, I was a computer nerd, but like when we dialed up on a computer the first time, it was to a BBS, and that was literally to one other person's computer. And we found out a phone number for another BBS where the person had two lines and two modems, so three people could be on the computer at the same time having a conversation. That was like crazy mind-blowing. I'm lucky that I had an older brother that was into this, so he kind of shepherded it to me. And I had an uncle that bought us a computer really young, so we got really lucky. But then we got into the days of the internet, and we had AOL, and then it expanded from there and stuff. And then we went into Instant Messenger. Well, all of these times, if you weren't in front of the computer, you couldn't have a conversation. And like chat rooms and things like that were so rudimentary. But like now, we're finally in this global situation where a community doesn't mean the people you live with that are your next door neighbors. You know, a community can be some affinity group, something you're into anywhere in the world. Like that's mm-hmm. what, that was that shift that at least for me, when I was, you know, me 10, 12 years ago when I was at MySpace, right? That was like the, oh crap, I actually have friends who are punk rockers in Florida or in Singapore or anywhere in the world that like I've never met in person before, but I've like been friends with them for like over 12 years now. Like that's weird. Like, but that didn't exist until then. Like think about the fact that we're seeing each other and talking. Like I bought a device for my grandmother in Israel with my cousins. We all pitched in. We had to each pay like $100. It was crazy expensive. Like it was a multiple $1,000 device or something so that she could get Skype in her bed because she had a problem with her leg and she couldn't get out of bed. My grandma's on the other side of the world and she was getting older. So we got her a special device for Skype where we could see a crappy pixelated version of her while we were talking on the phone, you know, a few years ago. It was mind blowing. And now we're doing this, right? From one side of the world to the other. And so, you know, now it, you know, the more we do this, the less meaningful these borders that were created for reasons that were not our reasons, matter, right? And so, you know, they happen for religious reasons, for money reasons, for power reasons. And like, we just want to get together and make a fair marketplace, right? Or we want to get together and listen to certain music together. We want to get together and watch certain movies together. Like we can do that now with anyone in the world. We could become best friends and people do online dating with people across the world and fall in love and go get married. Like, why do we have to still, why do we still have to live in this box? So I primed out for me, like I loved that it went from, because I participated in some DAOs and some votes and things like that. But like now all of a sudden the ethos of also this DAO to DAO stuff and this linking to the world, it's like taking governments and creating, you know, a real free union, right? Like it's such a cool thing. And now we're taking these ideas and taking them to a new level. And I think that because it's so early, and I think I keep saying the same thing in different ways, it's just going to be so fun once it gets easier and easier to use. If my son, who's an 8-year-old, can figure this stuff out, but it gets easier and it just becomes like just like apps on his phone, or he doesn't have a phone, but like apps on our iPad that I learn to use, like it's just going to be easier. And then it will just become a part of normal life. Like by the time, think about that, like I was 12 years ago or so was that MySpace craziness. And now we're doing this. Imagine his life when he's 20 years old, 12 years from now. Like, it's just going to be a part of life. It'll be like crazy. Remember when I had to go to an XDAI chain to participate in DAOs? That'll be like my version of like, remember when I, you know, when I had to pull over on the side of the road to figure out to make a phone call to someone? Like I can remember I had when I was 16, I only had a cell phone when I was making deliveries for my dad's shop because it was so expensive and crazy to have a cell phone that no 16-year-old would have a cell phone. Yeah. Like, and this is actually in Europe, people did have cell phones at the same time. Like my cousins in Israel had cell phones, cheaper. But I didn't, because it was cheaper because weird infrastructure reasons and stuff like that. They leapfrogged the infrastructure. And in the United States, it was too expensive. So I'd steal the cell phone from my dad's shop on the weekends when I went out with my friends. And it was like crazy that we'd have a cell phone in the car so we could make calls and whatever. The first time I was going to meet my wife when she was my, like going to be my girlfriend, or I was hoping she would be my girlfriend. She went to come over to my house. Her and her friend got like lost on the way or something. And then I talked to them like an hour later. I was like, where are you guys? And they're like, oh, we had to drive back home so we could call you.
Yeah, fuck.
That's great. That's
the world changes like, so
what happened. Yeah. So it's
so I the vision, you know, one it, vision that I it, that I think will come about of that, this DAO thing, especially when we figure these two things that are standing in the way, which is DAO to DAO relationships. So people here making a decision together on how their togetherness as a DAO will infect the other togetherness, and that these two institutions that are actually meta organisms of humans can talk to each other directly. this is something that's not fixed, and it's one of the missions of PrimeDAO. So if you're interested in this discussion, also come over. And the other is this UI, like it's making it like using all the other things, right? Yeah. I think once we do have that, earning money and getting educated will be the same thing. Education and productivity will be sort of the same and together. And we are going to be so free to find out who we are as a productive human instance. Yeah. So this contains, this revolution contains the seed of something very important, especially as the world robotizes and we might even end up challenging like the notion of job. You know, there will be these productive cells where you can tap in and you can get nourishment and give something back and et cetera, right?
Yeah. My son got the proposal, and we never discussed even once calling it a job or work or anything like that. He was talking about making a proposal and doing that. And the first thing he said to me when the proposal passed was, "I got a job at PrimeDAO." And I was like, I never thought of it like that. And that's what I think he named his NFT that. He called it like, "I got a job," or "I got a job at PrimeDAO" or something. And I was like, I guess you kind of did in this world. Like, yeah. But like, I hope in my mind, like that's every job he ever does. Like, how great is that? You make a proposal and talk about what you're really good at and what you want to bring to the table. And if you're a fit for that group, approved, right? Or not. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's way better than the opposite weird old school structure was like, here is what we need. And here's a list of prerequisites. And if you didn't go to school for 4 years at a university that we think is the right kind of university, we're not even going to look at your resume. Like,
yeah,
that doesn't even make sense anymore. It never even really made sense. But like, it was maybe necessary at some stages so that they could vet people or something. But I don't even know if it ever really was. Like, I was a horrible student. I decided to finish school because like, I think it was like a thing that I started, and I have this, you know, scratch in my brain that says you must finish everything you start or something. Mm-hmm. And you know, it would have served me way better if I stopped going to school. If those every afternoon I stuck around at MySpace and I hung out with those people late at night with what my partner would do back then. But I was like, I have to drive 2 hours to the school and finish it because I started and I'm going to finish, you know, like, but like, the things my son's doing now is way cooler than anything I ever did at school. And he's an 8-year-old. Like,
yeah. And I also am very curious to understand how it's going to shape the future of these 8-year-olds that are growing up now, this year of 2020. Right. So trying walking towards our, because when we started, guys, we were having our pre-conversation and we made a small pact that we would try to end with like a hopeful sensation, right? So, I am saying this as a like, let's pull our collective tools to be inspired and thriving in spite of the pandemic. And imagine being 8 years old in this year, right? Yeah. It's very, I don't even know if it's an interesting situation. Maybe they don't notice, or I don't know. Like, of course they notice. But so
we're like super open and transparent and just kind of tell everything. And maybe a little too much. I don't know. But what's actually interesting to me is that like there's an opportunity here. One, the fact that we're online having this conversation today, imagine this pandemic just 20 years ago, we couldn't do that. We'd be going crazy. Like there is really, you know, there's suffering in the world right now because of the pandemic. Mm-hmm. There's in the developed countries, there's you know, things like major depression and stuff like that. And then they have that in the less developed countries too. But in the less developed countries, there's famine. There's horrible, horrible things going on. But we're able to have this conversation. We're able to play with magical internet money and be super privileged and lucky to be where we are today. So we have to look at that and have some kind of responsibility, like some kind of how are we helping, you know, and what are we doing? And I think that the thing is, I try to look at, like, if I'm just going to try to look at what I have at home, I'm never going to have another year of my life where I get to spend every single day with my kids as long as I get to spend. And they probably got an education they would have never got by just overhearing these kind of conversations and hearing me talk about DAOs and look, my son minted NFTs and he did all these things. I don't know if that would have happened if it was a normal year and and 8 hours of the day he was at his elementary school. So, you know, there is this amazing opportunity, right? I'm getting like goosebumps thinking about it, but yeah, like
it's going to be hard to get kids back to school after.
Because most days, well, also like when they do go back to school, are they going to go back to school in this weird thing where they can't touch each other, where they're getting covered in sanitizer, where they're wearing masks, and it's like, is that going to be worse than just being home and having fun and not thinking about it 90% of the time? You're like, I don't know. Like there's, but at the end of the day, I think we're going to, at least for us, like the working older group of people, we've now learned that an office is not more productive, that you can be just as productive, if not more productive, just working from home and on the computer. That might create less traffic. That might create more happy people living where they want to live, working where they want to work, because you don't have to physically be in those places. That is planting seeds in people's minds of a more borderless world. Like, and we're seeing it in the United States, people changing states because they believe some states are less fair or more fair than others, but they can keep their job because jobs aren't firing people if they go live in a different place now. You know, jobs no longer, at least in the United States, I'm seeing this all the time, people not caring anymore if you're near the physical location or their headquarters or whatever. So that's going to create a more fair, you know, United States here, but it's going to create a more global world. Like I've never had a company since I've been 100% in control where the location of the person mattered. We have Zoran on our team in Macedonia. We have Adam on our team who happens to live in Southern California also. Adam's first day with us was the first day of quarantine. We've never worked in the same room with him. And the thing is, Joseph, my partner, and I only would be in the same room a couple days a week anyway, normally. One day a week could be at his place. One day a week could be at my place. Most days we just work online like this. So like, and every crypto organization is like that too. And so like, I think that it's happening more to the mainstream companies. And I think like this time and place, to switch it to more positive notes, it's like the beginning of what we're here for, right? And I think that what, like if you're here now today, this is an exciting time. Like, if you're just talking about prosperity and making money and feeding your family and feeding yourself and nourishing yourself and whatever we're talking about, I truly believe that if you're here today, you're not going to have a problem with that 5 years, 10 years from now. You're going to be the first in line for the job. You're going to be the person who understands the world, and you're going to be bringing your community into this. And I truly believe that. And maybe it won't be Prime DAO. Like we're in like the happy honeymoon phase, like getting things started. It's really exciting. But things change and revolve over time. Maybe it won't be Bitcoin. Maybe it will be Bitcoin. Maybe it won't be Ethereum. Maybe it will be Ethereum. Maybe it won't be Prime DAO. Maybe it will be Prime DAO. That doesn't matter, because we're here today and we're a part of this community, and we're a part of the solution, not a part of the problem. If you're here and trying to figure this out, like the well-intentioned group amongst us, like don't get sucked into the you know, media kind of like, you know, Bitcoin, blockchain, bad, good, whatever hype. Like this is only good for people. Like coming up with alternatives to the current system in a positive, responsible way can only help the world. And I love this stuff. And if you start meeting the community members, like smiles all around, good vibes all around, people trying to help each other all around, like you start paying attention to the Discord and you see what people are doing, it's like only positive. We're trying to build and create amazing, cool things for everyone. And that's the exciting part. And there's no barriers to entry other than knowledge, and we're trying to help with that. Like that's one of the things that you mentioned before, the documentation for Prime DAO. Like I haven't ever seen such robust and clear documentation for a DAO or for a project like this before, that explains the reasons for things. It explains why things are being done in certain ways. And then for participating, there's step-by-step instructions all along the way, and even more being created as we speak. I know, I think even you're working on some tutorial stuff for participating in the launch and all of these things. So it's just super exciting to see everything that's going on. And it's very different than the world we're used to. You know, it's very different than walking into a bank and asking for a loan or an account or anything like that. Like this, it's fun and exciting, and you get to meet amazing people around the world. Like, you know, Felipe and I, right?
I've never met you in person. More and more peer to peer every day.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. And that's really exciting. Like it starts spidering these networks, and you get to meet all sorts of people everywhere. It's really, really cool. Hold on just a second. So it's just all good stuff. And it's really, really just great to see like the seeds planted and this the border get thinner and thinner over time, and this world that we've been envisioning and talking about is really coming together. And I think that if we're going to look at the silver lining behind what we're talking about, you know, this you're in quarantine again, numbers are popping up over here, and it looks like, you know, every day is different here too. But the one thing that's constant is it's accelerating this digital world. You know, my kids do school over Zoom right now, right? Like, and you know what? Like, maybe it's because we have more interaction with them. Maybe it's because it's just a different medium. But they're learning just as much, if not more, and they're happy. Like, they get excited to hop on Zoom with their friends, and I think that like, it's the world's getting better, and this is accelerating it. And there's some other things that are going on that are dividing us, but I think that that's not real. That's you know, a bullshit layer of politics on top of our actual human interaction, and it distracts us sometimes and makes us angry and not happy. But I think that that's like less and less important every day that we can do this.
Yeah. Well, so thanks for letting us know that you have been able to extract so much hope out of the situation, and that because I've talked to a lot of dads and a lot of married people throughout the Corona times, and I can tell that you're truly happy, man, because sometimes they fail at not betraying that they're, you know, you're happy at home with your family.
I will not lie and say that I haven't been insanely depressed at times of being, you know, locked in and not being able to do certain things I want to do. I want to go meet my friends and have a drink. And I want to, I want my kids to go play with their friends unmasked and do whatever they want. And really friggin' sucks. It sucks. Like, there's nothing fun about that portion, but there is really exciting, amazing things happening because of it that we have to try and look at as the positive. Like, just to respond to you, like, it would be a total lie if I said it's all smiles.
Yeah, like, of course.
My kids cry. I've cried because of this stuff. Like, what, you know, it's
yeah, I've opened the episode admitting that this hasn't been an episode in 2 months because I was burnt out, like, completely, but now I'm back.
Yeah. And you do things to cope, and this is something amazing.
Yes. So thank you so much, Alon, for all the insight and all the hope, actually, with the very, very concrete vision that you have many reasons to be excited about what's happening. And see you on the other side. Let's make this launch. And hopefully this will bring some more people to come play with us, Primed Up.
That's right. Exactly. Come join us. Come join. Participate. That's the greatest thing you can do. Participate.
And you heard us right. We have 8-year-olds that can NFT better than you. Come join Prime DAO. Come play with us. And that's it for this episode of Mass Adoption.